Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
All right, so I titled my message today, Launching Rockets. I am not that creative, but when I heard this term, I went, oh, I love that. Launching rockets. And so when it comes to this idea of working with the next generation and how we're setting them up for success, I wanted something that was forceful, that was fun and exciting, because what is more exciting to a boy than things that explode, right? Like, that's just awesome, right? In fact, if I could get away with it, I would have brought a rocket and just, like, set it off in here. We would have got evicted, but we would have gone out with a bang, and it would have been awesome. You know, but my wife said, don't do that, because you and I will have conflict. So I didn't. But I pretended that I did. And it was awesome. It was really awesome. So I wanted something that was fun, because the truth is I'm very passionate about working with kids. I love working with kids and family. But I never imagined that I would actually be doing this kind of work. Like, I never went to school with the intentions of being a family pastor or children's pastor. It was just never on my radar. Yet when I look back at my life, I see this trajectory of how God was just kind of slowly shaping me along the way. I mean, I didn't see it, but he already knew. And it's kind of cool to look back. I remember as early as my childhood, you know, being a military dependent, we moved around a lot. And one of the first things that I would do whenever I would move into a new neighborhood is I would find the kids who liked to play sports, and I would organize them. And then we would, like, go play other kids in the neighborhood in wiffle ball matches. Like, we would take them on, and we were, like, serious. Like, we would sacrifice our white Hanes tee, and, you know, we'd make that ghetto jersey, you know, with Crayon marker. They didn't have, like, Sharpies back then, right? So you're like coloring like this for like 10 minutes trying to get, you know, the first part of the fourth. That's why most people fought over who had the number one, because it took a lot less time to make your jersey. And we loved those jerseys. They were horrid-looking, but we loved them. And we had so much fun, and I was so organized. And, you know, I even kept stats, okay? That's how nerdy I was with some of this stuff. But I just loved coaching. And that coaching spirit even followed me into high school. Between my junior and senior year, I got introduced to volleyball, and I just took off with it. I loved playing volleyball. And furthermore, for the most part, it was just because I'm like, okay, I'm naturally good at this. And so we like things that we're good at, because it makes us feel better about ourselves. And so, man, I just embraced volleyball, and I went with it. And so I would start recruiting other guys to come play. But I noticed, you know, the soccer guys, man, they got great footwork. So I would go and recruit the soccer guys and teach them how to play volleyball, because the basketball guys were too stiff and the baseball players were too overweight, you know. And so that was a joke. But there's a little bit of truth, you know, there's a little bit of truth. But no, I would teach them, and I would just coach them, and I would make them better at playing, because I, you know, I'm like, hey, you know, you need to try this, or you're getting too far underneath the ball, you know, stay behind the ball, see the court, you know. And it was just, I just loved it. It was just a part of who I was. And I remember my senior year, I became a lifeguard. Now, this is a big deal if you live in Hawaii, because being a lifeguard in Hawaii, it's like instant stud status, right? Like, you are, oh, you're a lifeguard, right? But instead of leveraging that just to meet girls, I actually went the route of becoming a swim instructor. And so I would teach kids swim lessons through the summer, and then I had this special group of kids that I would work with throughout the week, throughout the year. They were Montessori kids. I didn't know what Montessori was at 17. I thought it was code for rich people childcare. It isn't. I get that. So any of you educators are like, no, Montessori is based on a theory. I get that. I was 17. What did I know? I just saw really nice cars and really well-fed kids. So I just assumed, you know, hey, Montessori, rich kid, childcare. But these kids, man, they were so much fun. I loved them. They were swimming like fish, and I would take them off high dives, and we just, it was just such an exciting and just such a joy to do as a 17-year-old. In fact, I'll never forget, there was one little girl named Catherine, and she was so sassy. And she always had this line whenever I'd crack a joke, because, you know, I was sarcastic with, you know, I was in utero making sarcastic jokes, you know. And I would, you know, always say something to her, and she'd be like, "You're so silly, Billy." Like, that was her thing, right, you know? And then I'd, you know, I'd remind her, "My name is not Billy, it's Mr. Mike, and you better get that right, Catherine, or I'm going to drown you." Now, I'm just kidding, I didn't say that. But, you know, so we had fun. And so, again, I look back, and I see this trajectory of where God was taking me, and I just didn't see it. And the reason why I shared that with you is right off the bat, I don't want you to think, oh, he's a children's pastor, he's obliged to talk about kids. That's not what this is. I love what I do. Whether I was being paid for it or not, I would be doing this. And here's the thing. This is also something that we all need to be a part of. My end goal is not to get you to serve in children's ministry. That's not what I'm trying to do today. All right? If you're wise and God speaks to you, you're already in children's ministry, so that's for another message. So, but no, seriously, I want us all to see that we all have a responsibility when it comes to helping the next generation win. All of us. This is not a parenting message. This is not a parenting thing, even though the lion's share of the responsibility falls on parents. All of us have a responsibility for setting up the next generation because all of us have someone coming behind us in life. And as we're going to see in Scripture today, we're all implicated in the responsibility of helping the next generation win. And so that's why we're going to share this message, because it is hard for parents. You know, currently we have five generations. Oh, you know what? I forgot part of my message. Sorry. I just realized. I slipped. In the military, so going back to my story, so I kind of skipped like a huge part of my message. Sorry. Poor Wayne is up there going, "Bud, you left me behind." So the coaching thing continued through the military. I would coach, did Special Olympics, would hang out with kids. You know, we'd get together, barbecues. All the guys would go talk about politics. I'd go play with the kids, you know. When I was married, younger in my marriage, we would have big family gatherings. And instead of sitting at the adult table, I would actually go sit with the kids. Because you want to talk about stuff I don't care about. He's putting peas in his nose, and that's pretty cool. I want to see if he like gets it back up, if it gets stuck. I just want to watch it, you know. In fact, I may even go, "I think you can get two more in there." So that was kind of my story. And then again, it shouldn't have surprised me that God was leading me into children's ministry. Because for some reason, when it came to church, I thought, "Oh, I want to play with the big boys." You know, I didn't think church was going to be, you know, what God was leading me into, but he did. And so, you know, obviously I came into vocational ministry, and that's where we are today. So Wayne, you can actually go to that next part and move on to the five generations. So currently we have five generations in our culture today. The first generation is this one. Let's go ahead and put that up. Wayne, you're going to go two more. There we go. He's going to be mad at me. Go ahead and go one more. So here's the first generation, right? This is what's been dubbed the greatest generation. Those from the greatest generation are born from 1930 to 1946. And the reason why they're called the greatest generation, Wayne, you can go to the next slide. Tom Brokaw is the one that dubbed them this, is because when the war broke out, they chose to go into the war because it was the right thing to do, not because they had to, but because they wanted to. And so they got that name, the greatest generation. So is there anybody here actually born that is part of the greatest generation, 1930 to 1946? All right. So you already raised your hand. So you stole my joke. I was supposed to ask again, but say it louder, you know, because, you know, but you beat me to the punch, Ed. They're like, "Dum, next." After the greatest generation, we have this. Who's this? Baby boomers. So the greatest generation, they went to war, missing their ladies. They come home. Baby production in the U.S. goes up, hence the baby boomer generation, 1946 to 1964. These dates are debatable, so if like you're like into statistics and like you're like, "No, you got it wrong," if that's all you get on my message, I'm disappointed. All right. Next, who's this? Generation X, that's my generation, right? You know, love the 80s. Ooh, you know, 1964 to 1984. That's the generation that I am in. And then we have this generation. The next after that is the selfie generation. Who's this? The millennials, right? It's like, wait, I'm in a new restroom, hold on. You know, it's like, really? There's like a selfie for everything. It's annoying. Millennials, this is probably actually the most researched generation currently. Like, people are just like, what's wrong with these kids? And so they just keep researching them. I'm just kidding. And then lastly, we have the current generation. which they're born with screens in their faces. You know, they come out of the womb, you know, unlocking your phone and, you know, moving stuff around. But they're calling this the Generation Z because they just ran out of creative names for generations. So this must mean that we're now ushering in the end of the world because they've just run out of names for generations. I mean, where do you go after Z? But my kids are part of this generation. And my five-year-old, like, when he was three, he was already, like, unlocking my phone. I mean, I would get the iPad. I'm like, dude, where are all my apps? You know, he, like, rearranged them and stuff. And I'm so OCD. You move one app out of place, I know about it, and I'm mad about it. And I would, you know, ask him, and he just goes, you little punk. So this is what we have. But the thing that we all have in common, whether you are part of the greatest generation or whether you're in Generation Z, is we all have someone coming after us in life. And we have a responsibility to help them win. So grandparents, you've got parents coming after you. Great-grandparents, you have grandparents coming after you. Parents, you have kids coming after you. Kids, you have younger kids coming after you. We all have someone coming behind us. And so we have this responsibility to help them win. But what does that mean? What does it mean to help them win? Well, what it doesn't mean is we just want to give kids a better standard of living, right? I mean, the reality is they probably will have a better standard of living. I mean, I have a far better standard of living than my parents did, and it's not because I'm more successful than they are, but technology has just changed so much in my lifetime that my standard of living is far greater than what my parents had. I mean, I can't even imagine life for Netflix, can you? I mean, what would you do? You turn on the TV and just watch whatever was there? I mean, how miserable of existence is that, you know? But we don't want to give them a better standard of living. We want to give them a better standard for living. This is character. This is grit. This is faith. This is hope. These are all the things that will take people through the hard things of life. And we can all be part of that. Now, again, if you're a parent, you carry the lion's share of this. My parenting is a huge task today. Our culture is so complex that it just fills you with all kinds of anxieties. And parenting is one of those things that it will bring you the greatest joy, but you can have like a Disneyland day one day, and then you can have like I'm the end of the world day is tomorrow. You know, you can go from this is the greatest joy to, you know, you've just been cut down to your knees. And so parenting is very challenging, and that's why we need everyone in the game of helping the next generation win. Because the wider we make that circle of influence, the clearer we give the next generation a direction for where they need to go, for who they need to be, and we start teaching them how to discover their meaning of life. Now, before we move on, I need to give you a disclaimer. I know this will surprise many of you, but I am not an expert at parenting. You were supposed to be. What? Yeah, see? No, I know. I'm not even an expert at working with kids. You know, my kids still live at home, so I'm like, you know, what street cred do I have? However, I have made some observations over the past 15 years of being a pastor, and so I'm going to share just 7 of those with you. So, okay, we're not going to be here for 3 hours. And here they are. Some of them are going to be short. Some of them will be a little bit more involved. But here are my 7 observations for how to help the next gen win. Observation number 1, the greatest gift we can give the next generation is to be fully alive. And the reason why I say this is because an empty jar can fill what? It's not your question. An empty jar can fill what? Nothing. And so if you're not alive, what life do you have to pass on? If you don't have a solid faith, what faith is there for you to pass on? If there's no joy in your life, what joy is there to pass on? We need to be fully alive. And so you need to own your story. Don't let your story just happen to you. Don't just settle in life. Own your story. And work for that joy that's going to help them to see that life is an adventure to be lived. It is something to be experienced and explored. And so the greatest gift we can give them is to be fully alive ourselves, which leads into the next one. Number 2, we are always teaching kids something, and sometimes we use words. Sometimes we use words. Your parents taught you so much about life, whether they intended to or not, and whether it was something they should have taught you or not. And so the question isn't whether we're teaching the kids that we interact with. The question is, what are we teaching them? Let me give you a quick little example. Most of these are yes or no questions. Some are A or B answers. So just bear with me. But growing up, did you want the kind of life that your parents had? Yes or no? Okay. Growing up, did your parents just kind of allow life to happen to them, or did they see life as an adventure to be had? Growing up, did you want the kind of marriage that your parents had? Did your parents' faith or their path or their religion, did it work for them? Did it give them joy? Did your parents see every day as something to be anticipated, to have an expectation for what could be, or did they just get through it? Did your parents, did they work out their own wounds and issues? Did they do some interior work? Or did you have to deal with all their unresolved pain and issues and wounds? You see, your parents taught you a lot whether they intended to or not. And the truth is you already knew that. And the truth is you're teaching the next generation things whether you realize it or not. And so let's step back and let's be intentional about what we're teaching them, because we're always teaching them something. The question is what, not whether we are or not. So I'm going to take you to Scripture because, you know, reading the Bible is kind of a good thing to do in church. So we're going to go to Deuteronomy chapter 6, and I want to set this up a little bit. So Moses is giving this grand speech to the nation of Israel. Like, this is his last opportunity to really just give them a vision for what could be, who they're supposed to be as the people of God, because they're about to enter the promised land. But he's not going. We don't need to get into all that. There were some reasons he upset God, so God said, you don't get to go. And so Moses was going to, you know, give this last speech. This is like mic drop moment for the nation of Israel, and then he was just going to go off and die. You know, real exciting times, right? And I can imagine the anticipation that the people have, because Moses commanded some attention. I mean, they've basically lived on this man's leadership for a very long time, and now he's going to give them one last speech. What is Moses going to tell them? You know, hide me in your luggage, take me with you. I mean, what's he going to say? You went to, oh, no, yeah, we're good. You can stay there. So here's what Moses says. Listen, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And you must love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, and all your strength. And you must commit yourselves wholeheartedly to these commands that I am giving you today. And then he says, repeat them again and again to your what? Your children. Talk about them when you're at home and when you're on the road, when you are going to bed and when you are getting up. Tie them to your hands and wear them on your foreheads as a reminder. I'm not sure about the forehead thing. And write them on the doorposts of your house, on your gates. And what Moses is saying, he's addressing the entire nation. He didn't say, hey, just parents. He's saying, hey, everybody. You are to teach the generation coming after you about who God is, about what God has done, and about what that means for the kind of life we're supposed to live. And here's the thing. Don't do it once a year at the dinner table and light a bunch of candles and have a little special ceremony. You know, it's not going to be a Disneyland experience. You're going to communicate these things every day in ordinary ways. When you're up and about, when you're helping with homework, when you're cooking meals, when you're taking out the chore, you know, the laundry, they're taking out the laundry, taking out the trash, doing laundry. You can tell I do a lot at home. But that word repeat that Moses uses is, in a lot of translations, is the word impress. And in the Hebrew, that word impress means to sharpen. And so what Moses is teaching the nation of Israel is, look, your job is to continually sharpen the generation that's coming after you by repeating the truths of God over and over them to them. It was supposed to be embedded into their rhythms of the day. It was supposed to be embedded into just the heart of their culture as a whole. So we're always teaching something. And sometimes we use words. And the question isn't whether. The question is, what are we teaching them? Observation number 3. The next generation will have their path, and you have yours. How many of you have ever been guilty of saying to kids, or to your own kids, you don't even know how good you have it? right? And the truth is if you pause, you remember your parents said the same thing to you. And guess what? Their parents said the same thing to them. And guess what? You were all right. They don't know how good they have it because they don't have your experience. They don't have your context for where you've come from and what you've been through and what you've changed for them to really appreciate it. So don't be offended when they don't. What other experience do they have? They didn't have yours. And for a lot of us, that's what we wanted. We didn't want our kids to have the kind of relationship with the parents that we had. We didn't want our kids to experience the kind of home life that we had. We didn't want them growing up in the same kind of neighborhoods that we had. We didn't want them to have to go through what we went through. Even though it benefited us in some degree, because when we have those struggles, it develops us. It develops that character, and that character develops hope. And that hope is what sustains you when life gets hard. And so we tend to get offended, right? They don't know how good they have it. And, you take all this stuff for granted. Well, of course they do, because they don't have your experience. And so what do we tend to do? We tend to do what I call like this little bait and switch storytelling, right? We start sharing stories about our lives. You know which ones I'm talking about, right? The uphill, both ways, in the snow, barefoot stories, right? And then instead of just sharing the story, we do this whole, therefore you should bait and switch thing. So we're not connecting with them. We're sermonizing them. And kids are really good at sniffing that out. And the truth is, if that's all that you're going to do, you're going to start putting a wedge between you and them, because they're just going to assume that anytime you have a story to share, there's a string attached. And so as soon as you go, you know, when I was a kid, they've checked out, because I don't need another sermon. There's like 4 billion podcasts that I can listen to if I really want another sermon. What they need from you is just to simply share your story. Just share your stories. And let God prick their ears and focus on the things that they need to pull out of those stories and apply to their own lives. He is capable of doing that. I know it seems impossible, but he can do it. He can do it. So we need to just put the stories out there, trust that God can take them and work them for their good, which means that sometimes you need to let them experience their own failure, okay? Because if they don't, we're setting them up to be crippled by fear. Don't try anything, because if you fail, that's the worst thing that can happen. Don't put yourself out there, because if you get rejected, you'll never recover. We don't want to cripple the next generation with fear. So let them fail in small ways, okay? I'm not suggesting that we, champion the big failures of life. We want to warn them about those failures. But here's what I'm getting at, is sometimes a small scar will protect them from a deep wound. Are you tracking with me on that? A small scar will protect them from a deep wound. Let them fail. They want to try something. Let them try it. Which leads us pretty much into our next one. So sometimes when it comes to the next generation and their own past, you need to hold your tongue. And you need to let them go left when you know they should go right. They'll figure it out. They have GPS now. It's like all over the place. All right. Number 4, say yes to your kids as much as possible. Now the kids are like, yeah. Say yes as much as possible. Well, here's what we're saying yes to. Experiences. Try something new. Even if you think they're going to suck at it, let them try. Don't force it on them, but if they say, you know what, I want to play soccer, and I'm like, dude, you can't even keep your shoes tied. And I'm not kidding. Like, you can't keep your shoes tied. Like, I am committed that they're my middle born, that he's gonna be like, he'll have Velcro shoes for the rest of his life. Like, he just cannot keep his shoes tied. And it baffles me. I'm like, doesn't that bother you? He's like, huh? It bothers me. But let them try. They may fail, so what? They may get rejected, so what? Failure is not the end of life. Failure is not the end of things. And you know this. Failure is your opportunity for growth. And the real difference between an immature person and a mature person isn't that the mature person never screws up. It's that they learn from their mistakes. So failures are really our opportunity to grow, to mature, to progress. And again, if all we're trying to do is protect them from that failure, we're just crippling them with fear. And again, I'm not saying say yes to every toy in the toy aisle. I'm not saying say yes to every stupid thing that's like screaming at you at the checkout counter at the grocery store. Oh, Dad, come on! You know, I'm not saying say yes to every bit of binging on video games and crappy foods. I'm sorry, young adults, I know you binge on video games. Because at some point as parents, we need to protect them from the things that are just not healthy for them. That's not what we're talking about here, okay? Say yes to them trying something that could not work out for them. Because you never know when it will. I had two guys in my life that surprised me. And they really taught me this principle. They both came into my office when I was a pastor at another church. And, you know, this whole, hey, Mr. Mike, want to meet with you. You've been an integral part of my life. And, you know, I'm graduating high school. And here's what I want to do. And I just wanted to share it with you. I'm excited about it. And one wanted to be an Air Force pilot. I'm thinking, all right, well, that's a tough gig, man. Not everybody gets to do that. 95% of the people in the Air Force don't fly planes. They look at them, but they don't actually get in them. So, you know, I'm like, I don't want to discourage this kid. The other guy, again, this is a couple years later, he wanted to be Navy SEAL. I'm like, well, you've really kind of like, you've really raised the bar on this one. And again, I'm thinking, you know, a lot of guys want to do that. It's, you know, all the glory, you know. But it's really hard to get into. Both those career fields have a very high washout rate. And I didn't want to poo-poo their dreams. I didn't want to, you know, come down, well, you know, that's not really going to happen. And so I kind of like tried to like, you know, cowardly go around it by asking other questions, you know. Like, so, well, that's cool, you know. What's your backup plan? What? I don't have a backup plan. You don't have a backup plan? I would have a backup plan. I would really have a backup plan. And essentially what I was communicating to them was, I don't think you can do it. I don't think you're going to make it. And it wasn't because I didn't think they were great guys. They were exceptional kids. I just knew that was a hard thing to do. Now, you should know that I was right. They failed. They washed out, and they're not miserable in life. But no, I'm just kidding. They actually did. They made it. So John is now a pilot in the Air Force. Well, we say he half made it because he doesn't fly fighter jets. He flies like Lear jets for generals and diplomats. We're like, you're only halfway there. You don't have any guns, right? No, you're only halfway there. And the other guy is a Navy SEAL. He's a Navy SEAL, and I don't see him anymore because he's a Navy SEAL. You know, we don't talk about life. You know, we don't swap stories. You know, what'd you do today? I killed somebody. What'd you do today? Wrote a sermon. Not same thing, right? Yeah. But it taught me something. I don't do that anymore. If kids say, hey, I want to do this, I just listen. I ask them questions. I probe. I let them tell me about how you're going to do it, how you're going to get there. Because if they fail, I don't want it to be because I put a seed of doubt into them. I don't want them to see me. If they didn't make it, they just didn't make it. But I don't want them to come back and go, yeah, you didn't believe in me anyway. I don't want that to be what they see when they see me. I want them to be, no, that guy believed in me. And so now I can come alongside, didn't work out. Oh, sorry about that, dude. And I can encourage him. All right, so what's next? What's that next thing? So you see that? You see that idea of saying yes? We're not trying to build up their egos in a false way, but if we're like, if you want to try it, try it. And I'm not saying, you know, let's, you know, just say yes to whatever and let's let toddlers play with power saws, okay? That's just stupid. That's not what I'm talking about here, all right? There's a level of common sense that has to guard all of that. But we need to say yes as much as possible because we want them to experience life. We want them to take risks. We want them to see life as an adventure to be had. And that they're not afraid of failure. You fail, so what? Learn from it. Do something again. I mean, my goodness, have you ever read history? Some of the guys that are known for the most, you know, breakthrough inventions, you know how many times they failed before they finally got that one thing that revolutionized things? A lot. A lot. So failure is a part of the process. And so we need to say yes as much as possible. Because when we fail, there's opportunity for growth. Opportunities for growth, they take perseverance. And perseverance develops character. And as we read in the Bible, character produces what? Hope. And hope is a sustaining thing to have in life. Now, here's another reason why you want to say yes as much as possible. So that when you have to say no, it's legit. You don't want to give your kids an excuse to say, you always say no. Oh, that always says no. He always says no to everything. Say yes to as much as possible so that when you have to say no, it's legit. Because when you say no, it's because we're saying yes to something better. And that's essentially what we want to teach our kids. What's before you in life? You can say yes to all of this, but what's the best thing to say yes to? But you can't say yes to them all. They're going to eventually start working against each other. So by us saying no when we need to, teaches them to say yes only to the things that are the best. Does that make sense? So if I were to ask you, the kids you work with, or if your parents, your kids, would your kids say you say yes a lot, or would they say you say no most of the time? Start saying yes as much as possible. All right. Observation number 5. Raise good punks. Right? I love this one. My wife hates it. I love it. She hates the idea of punks. I'm like, no, I love the image of some kid with a mohawk walking an old lady across the street. Like, that's just awesome. Like, I just love it. Raise good punks, right? Because as parents, is what we're doing. We're kind of teaching kids rules. We're saying, do this, right? That's like this pre-conventional wisdom. And then we're saying, well, here are the rules. So we just do what I say. But now it's, here are the rules. Make a choice, right? That's conventional wisdom. You know, here's the set of rules. You break these, we're not good. You keep these, we're good. But at some point, we have to take them to post-conventional wisdom. Here's why the rules are here. Here's what they're trying to accomplish. Here's what they're trying to protect. And the reality is we have bad systems in our world. We have systems that are in place, even in our own country, that are not doing good for people. And we need to raise up kids that can look at those systems and go, you know what? We're not going to follow those rules, and we're going to rebel against these rules because we need to put back dignity. We need to put back value of life. We have systems that keep people trapped in poverty, cycles of dysfunction and hopelessness, and we need to raise good punks that say, you know, I don't care what the rules are. That's not right. And so we're going to rebel against that thing. And so we need to raise good punks. Now, bad punks versus good punks. Bad punks, they like to show their favorite finger to everybody and everyone about everything, right? Don't tell me what to do, you know, I'm not conforming to anything, you know, Sid Vicious, live forever, you know, whatever. 80s, Generation X thing, sorry. If you didn't get it, we know you're not in that generation. But bad punks, they just want to rebel for the sake of rebellion. But a good punk, they know the rules. And for the most part, they follow the rules. But when the rules need to be broken, they're not afraid to. And so we want to teach them to rebel from a position of maturity versus anarchy. So in other words, we want to make them a post-conventional punk, if you will. All right. Number 6, observation number 6, we're chugging along. We want to give our kids as little as possible that they will have to unlearn later. I know that's a little wordy, so let me say it again. You want to give your kids as little as possible that they will have to unlearn later. In other words, unpack your own baggage. Don't pass it on to them. Don't go, I really suck at this. There you go. Good luck. Don't do that. Don't do that. Unpack your own baggage. Now, with that being said, you know, that ties back to the, you know, be fully alive and all that stuff. We still need to protect their environment. So part of giving them as little to unlearn is watching the environments that they're in and protecting the health of those environments. So whether they're in sports, whether they're in some kind of dance or creative arts, their education, we need to protect those environments, and we need to constantly be observing those environments. And when they start getting unhealthy, we need to get involved. And we need to either change the temperature of that environment so that it becomes healthy again, or if we recognize we cannot change the temperature of that environment, we need to find a new environment. If you were here last week, I shared a story about how we pulled my daughter out of a school and moved her because we were having a bad educational experience. I was seeing her love for learning tank. And I couldn't change the environment. And I didn't want her to have to unlearn bad educational habits. I didn't want her to have to unlearn bad attitudes toward education. So we had to change that environment. That's my job, is to protect those environments, because I don't want her to have to unlearn a bunch of bad things later. Now, we chose to put our kids into piano. Anybody suffer through piano as a child? Yeah. Sorry. I didn't. My wife did, and therefore she decided that it was worth punishing our kids because it's kind of like the sadistic thing. No, I'm just kidding. But we decided, you know what? Piano is going to be part of our kids' education. It's non-negotiable. You're doing piano. You can deal with that in therapy later in life. And the reason why we wanted them to be piano is we just wanted to develop their brains better. In addition, whatever. You know, get that right. Hemisphere, left hemisphere, you know, working again, strengthening that corpus callosum for all you biology anatomy majors. And we wanted them to have an appreciation of the arts. Our kids are not going to be the next Mozart, all right? It's just not happening, okay? That's not the end goal. The end goal is they're not even going to get a scholarship for music. And if I'm being honest, and you can hate me later, as a dad, from an economic standpoint, I don't want my kids to major in music, all right? I want them to get a good job, right? And I know everyone's like, I can't believe you said that. What about to say yes? I'm flawed, okay? I'm human too. So our goal is not to get them a college scholarship. Our goal is to develop them. Our goal is to give them an appreciation of the arts, to appreciate the hard work that goes into writing music, putting a piece of art together. And so that they can appreciate it, whether they like it or not, they know the amount of hard work that went into it. And it opens them up to just try things. And so that's something that we do. Now, if my kids have a bad experience with piano, I need to start asking some questions. Well, why? Is it just because it's hard work and they don't like it? That's life, man. Get over it. You know, part of life is doing things that are hard. You know, nobody said life would be easy. One of my favorite lines to my kids, that's not fair. Life is fair. You should learn that now. Save yourself a lot of frustration for the rest of your life. Life isn't fair. Life is hard. So accept it and do your piano homework. This is the way it is. Now, if the teacher is making the experience negative, well, then we need to find a new experience. Because we don't want them to have to unlearn bad attitudes or bad habits. We want to promote good, healthy habits. And sometimes the person that needs to be removed from the environment so that it can be healthier is who? It's you. And with the instance of piano, it's me. When I was the one on top of the piano, taking in the piano practices, trying not to fall asleep in the lady's house as she's giving lessons, like, I'm not joking, like, I mean, I would almost get emotional, like, I would cry on piano days. And so their progress is going like this. And so we got the email, you know, I've noticed that the progression is not moving in the upward direction for your kids, it is moving in the downward predictions. Translate, your husband sucks at this. And so my wife had to have just a frank conversation, and she's like, well, why don't you just, I'm like, look, hon, you like to eat my cooking, right? She's like, yeah, I like your cooking. I said, do you like to cook? She's like, I hate cooking. I enjoy the end product of my kids playing piano. I love sitting on the couch and listening to them play. But I hate the cooking part really bad. And so the best way to protect that environment was to get me out of it. And I honestly, the day my wife said, you know, we're going to switch and I'll start taking them, I was like, I'm so happy. I'm so happy today. You don't even know how happy I am. And to think that something as simple as that, seriously, tears would come to my eyes thinking about that. I don't have to do this anymore. I just get to hear the end product. I get to show up at the recital and be the good dad. Life is good. So sometimes the person that needs to get out of the environment is you. All right, last observation, and we'll wrap up here because I know I'm going to be running late, but that's the punishment you get for coming to second service. You slept in, but now I get to go long. Observation number 7, it's really important that you teach your kids to ask questions, and even more so to teach them how to ask good questions. The greatest gift we can give to our kids is this ability to ask good questions and think critically. But the reason why we want them to ask questions is because we want them to own the information. Because if all we do is just sermonize them and lecture them and say, here, stuff it, memorize it, and know the answer, it doesn't mean that they own the information. It doesn't mean that there's any motivation behind the what behind the why. They could care less sometimes. So we want to encourage them to ask questions so that they own the information. I want to go back to that passage of Scripture in Deuteronomy in chapter 6. So Moses, you know, was saying, hey, look, everybody, you need to be in on the game of helping the next generation win. And do it every day. Everyday normal activities. And he says, and here's why. Because you're about to go to some place that's really, really good. Life's going to get great for you, and you're going to forget God. Because Moses knew what we know intuitively, that when life's good, we don't need God. I got it all together. We don't need God until a crisis hits, and we don't have the solution or the money to get out of it. And I'm like, okay, God, I need you now. Right? And so Moses is saying, look, don't do that. And so here's what he says. I'll kind of like read some of it. I won't read all of it. He says, look, the Lord your God will soon bring you into the land he swore to give you, the promised land, when he made a vow to your ancestors, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It is a land with large, prosperous cities that you did not build. The houses will be richly stocked with goods you did not purchase or produce. You will draw water from cisterns you did not dig, and you will eat from vineyards and olive trees you did not plant. When you have eaten your fill in this land, he says this, be careful not to forget the Lord. And then he goes on, who rescued you out of slavery? Don't you remember, life used to suck, now it's better. Don't forget where you've come from. And the best way to do that is to repeat those truths, those stories over and over again in your everyday normal life. And then he goes on to say this, and the next thing. Go ahead to the next one there. It says, in the future, your children will what? Ask you, what is the meaning of these laws, decrees, and regulations that the Lord our God has commanded us to obey? And then you must tell them. Moses was saying, you need to have open dialogue with your kids. You need to be approachable. You need to be available so that they can ask you what is going on in their little minds. Dad, why is ISIS so angry at America? Dad, why did slavery happen? Dad, why this thing? We need to be available to them. But if I come home, check out because I want to do my little thing and I want to get on my little device and I just want to, you know, I need some me time. I'm basically saying, look, you don't matter that much to me. I can communicate all the love things in the world, but if I don't enjoy my kids and if I don't spend some time with them and make myself available to answer questions, I'm communicating something much different. And so Moses was saying, look, your kids should be asking you questions and you should be answering them to the best of your ability. And if your kids don't ask questions, you need to ask them questions. Get a little inquisitive. You know, what do you think about this thing? And then just listen. The goal isn't to give them the answer to make them come to the right answer. The goal is to teach them that their voice matters. Their voice matters, and they need to gain confidence in that because when they start asking questions, why do you do that? Why is it done this way? What if we did it something different? They own the information, and they're going to now drive where that information is taken. And so in closing, I want to say this. Enjoy your kids. If all you're doing is just putting up with them, doing your duty, your kids will pick up on that. They're going to pick up on that. You can say that you love them with your words, but if you don't actually enjoy them, you will leave them with a different impression. Because when we enjoy our kids, it helps shape the way they see their world, the way they see themselves. And when most of us decided to have kids, I mean, let's be honest, we weren't looking for labor savings devices. I mean, that might have been the case 50 years ago, maybe 100 years ago, but that wasn't the case today. That's not what drove us. The truth is we felt something inside of us, almost something calling us to create something new, to bring something into this world that would be a gift to others. And when we enjoy our kids in our home or the kids that we interact with in our vocations and just in our neighborhoods, we give them that sense of joy about who they are and about the world that they're in. And yes, sometimes they're a pain in the butt. I get that. I have three of my own. And the truth is during those times, whether it's a season of life, you know, body changes and stuff like that, you know, and you're walking around with a big fat satchel of chocolate, you know, boop, just chew and calm down, chew and calm down. Yes, that's my little internal joke with my daughter. I'm like, do I need to get the satchel? No, Dad, I don't need to get the satchel. I'm not being emotional. You sure? I just got white chocolate. They're going to go through seasons, and it's during those times that we need to dig deeper to find the things that bring us joy, because they need to be reminded of the fact that they bring us joy, that we enjoy them. Because if you work with kids or you have kids that make you miserable, it's because they're miserable. And so we've got to help them see the joy. We've got to help them get unstuck with whatever has gotten them stuck. So we got to enjoy them. We got to want to enjoy them. Because in the end, you're launching rockets, working with the next generation, being a parent, it's a massive responsibility. You are launching a rocket, so enjoy it. And if you think about it, when you launch a rocket, you put everything you can think of that needs to be in that rocket. You set it up, and you let it go, and you have to trust that that rocket has everything that it needs to get to its final destination. And that's what we do. When we're working with the next generation, we give them everything we have and then we release them. And they can squander it or they can take it and double it. But we have to get out of the way. And so really parenting and working with the next generation is just this really slow process of letting go. And if you start now, you'll be ready when it's time to completely let go. Because we are launching rockets. So enjoy it. And help the next generation win. Because all of us, every generation, has the privilege and the responsibility to help the next generation win. Because they don't need a better standard of living. They need a better standard what? For living. And when we help them win, we win. Let's pray. Lord, I just thank you so much for today. God, thank you for the grace extended to me as I went longer. But Father, I pray that you would just stir in us just this discontent to just allow things to be what they are, Lord, that we would seek you on our knees, that we would seek you on our face to just show us how are we supposed to help the next generation win? What is my role? Who is in my sphere of influence? Who is in my neighborhood? Who is in my family? Maybe obviously just in my own children, Lord. Help me to see the impact that I have whether I intend to or not, Lord. And help me to leverage the moments and the time that I have to produce something potentially good in them versus something bad. And so, Holy Spirit, help us to just kind of sift through this and gain some clarity on what this looks like for us tomorrow morning and for the rest of our lives. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.